Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.
Welcome along to the Wise Men Say podcast. Six defeats in a row for Sunderland. It's never been seven outside the top flight. So we're going to try not be too miserable, but there's only so much you can do in said situations. Joining myself, Stephen Goldsmith, as always, is Gareth Barker. Evening.
Hello.
Evening. Yeah. You okay?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah.
Still recovering.
From your illness.
Yeah.
Yeah, we couldn't do the pod last week because Gareth wasn't very well. And I had a situation where the sickness bug just sweeps around the house and all the kids get it like one by one. Yeah. It would be easier in a way if they just all had it at the same time, but they like follow each other in consecutive days with it. So it was just wasn't happening last week, was it?
Oh, well. We're just
not like we're winning, is it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know, so. I'm sure people like won't be that bothered. John and myself and Gareth is Jimmy Ray. Evening, Jimmy.
Good evening. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. Happy household for you at the minute. Isn't your wife a Sheffield United fan?
She is, yeah. So, yeah, it's thought he's been fun for a few weeks.
Lots of joy.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah, when you watch Sheffield United at the minute, it's like PTSD, isn't it? It just like, brings it all back when you watch it. It's the same even with Burnley, you know, like they just keep conceding like last-minute goals. And like that only happens when you're like,
well, yeah, like even
down
on Saturday,
in the Premier League,
they were winning till the last minute. Sheffield United and Burnley both when they both conceded. And it's just, it was particularly bad last Monday when they were 4-0 down inside.
Yeah, that was really like watching that thing. And God, this is just we've been here before where you just conceding goals like that. So at least we're not there. Although, like I've just said, seven defeats in a row never happened for Sunderland outside the top flight. It's quite remarkable when you think about it. Did you see the stat earlier that with one of the podcasts, the Championship podcasts, put out to say that the average age of the Sunderland side on Saturday was the youngest there's ever been?
Yeah, it was like 20, pretty much exactly 20 or something, wasn't it? And wasn't it Peterborough under Gary Johnson, like 10 years ago was the next.
That's, just to bring it back to the Johnson family,
That's crazy, that, isn't it? Like, No, not ideal.
Well, it's not, though, is it? And this is the thing. I mean, we'll have a little more about other stuff, I guess. We'll get onto the match specifically. Didn't even think Southampton were that good either, which makes it worse, doesn't it? Like,
I thought that. I mean, the way to play against them is to press. You know, in the similar, I guess, to how we sort of did in the home leg, is they are vulnerable at the back on the ball and stuff. And there was a few times we did press them and we did have some joy, but we weren't coordinated enough. It didn't seem like as planned. You know, like when we played them at home, it was all very much part of a plan and everyone sort of seemed to know what they were doing. It was consistent. I think we almost sort of like, because like you said, they're not as good maybe as the results suggest. It was... We did have some joy doing it, but we just let them have far too much, going forwards themselves in the midfield. I mean, obviously we'll come on to it, but yeah, I mean, I think the midfield is a bit of an issue, wasn't it?
It's interesting you mention the 5-0 win, because like the contrast was just smacking in the face, wasn't it? Where I was like almost like this is just a reminder of where we were and where we are now. I think before we get other goals and stuff, like, I will never ever be talked around that Barr can play on the left and cut inside. Does not have that in his locker to do that. And the Southampton game at home this season was the first time afterwards where we were like, actually, I think we found his position on the right because they were concentrating on Clark that much, and Barr really stretched them by pulling out to the right with his running in behind, and he had a really good game, and it was just
he seems comfortable because if you remember against Borough a few weeks ago, he started on the right and was pretty bright there as well. I think he definitely on the right is definitely for him much better than on the left because like you say he just doesn't have the skill set to cut in and be a threat from the left like Clark obviously does, and obviously it's big shoes to fill, but you just wonder what Dodds has seen to put him out there in the first place, because it was one of a few odd sort of decisions with the starting lineup, I thought.
I know that is the trend, and I'm guessing if you're thinking you don't have a centre forward you feel confident with, you think, well, let's put us going on the outside and cutting the ball into the box because there's nobody there going to gobble up the chances. So I kind of get the logic where you're thinking actually come inside and try and cause damage yourself by cutting inside and drawing defenders out and looking for a little through slip, little slip through ball to somebody or having a shot yourself. But it's just, it's all it's doing is just highlighting the difference Jack Clark makes when he's not on the side. That's all it's achieving in my eyes. Right, Southampton's first goal. This doesn't happen. So we were mentioning there about Sheffield United, weren't we, and saying that you just know you're near the bottom when you start conceding some of those like terrible goals and stuff. We just aren't conceding this goal. When was the last? Where do we even start with this goal here? The ball is getting floated over, and you know, argument to say Patterson should have come for it, even
Could
if he didn't.
Bellingham not just leave it though?
Well, like, this is the thing. So there's an argument. Firstly, say Patterson just comes and takes his defenders out and says that's my ball. Second one is that Patterson. If I'm playing a defence and I'm talking amateur level, like extreme amateur level, any of the keepers I've played alongside is saying that's gone, leave it. Hume's standing behind him. So if the keeper doesn't see it, you'd expect him to say something similar as well. And then even if you don't get a shout to say, you know, it's gone. Inexplicably heading the ball back into the danger area from that position. And then Patterson sort of, don't know, could he have pushed away from danger himself with a chance to come in? Maybe that's the harshest one out of them all, but I just think it was just a catalogue of just complete crapness. And this does happen to a side who's out of form, and that's the alarming thing. You start to defend like this. I can't remember us conceding a goal like this in a very long time. Quite lost for words.
It feels like we conceded lots of bad goals recently, so. You know, we just start the game to concede a goal right at the start of the game is frustrating, but it kind of just felt like there's just an inevitability about the goal, the kind of goals are conceded, inevitability about the end result, and really the kind of goals are conceded at the moment just encapsulate all of that. Really, it's a lack of confidence, lack of self-belief, and in those moments you need probably more than what we've got in terms of the personnel, and you know, we've got nobody really who's going to put, you know, say the right things, do the right things. It doesn't feel like, it just feels like we're completely rudderless at the moment on and off the pitch. We've got a novice manager, a novice team. You know, we've lost six on the bounce for the first time in best part of 20 years. And that was the 15-point season, I think. So, it doesn't particularly bode well for the rest of the season. You know, we were talking about it on the pod we did a few weeks ago, like saying, oh, we couldn't lose six in a row, but that doesn't tend to happen because you think, you know, you could do this, you could do that, never seems to. Well, it has transpired on this occasion that has happened. And now we've got like a massive game at the week against QPR because every time we watch a team who are down the bottom, they look a little bit, they look a lot brighter than us and a little bit more organised. You know, I know Huddersfield got beaten at the weekend, but I've seen them a couple of times and they've been all right.
No, Sheffield QPR, Wednesday.
You know, yeah, Sheffield Wednesday.
I mean, God, when we played down there early on in the season and we went there, like I went to that match and it was just like, it was genuinely like playing against a non-league team in the in the cup. Such was the gulf in quality. And they've been, the three of them have been inventive with managers, haven't they?
And QPR, they won at Leicester a couple of weeks ago as well, didn't they, QPR? I think 2-1.
Well, I watched them, who they played the other night? West Brom.
Yeah.
Absolutely battered them. Two Stonewall penalties not given. One was a defender tipping the ball off the bar, which was quite something if you haven't
seen. The handball.
Not on the lid, and they look good. And they look good. And it's, they'll fancy this now. We've seen this countless times over the years.
Because they've got all three of these teams, I think we mentioned Wednesday, Huddersfield, QPR. They might not necessarily have the individual talent, which is why obviously they are where they are, but they're well organised and the managers have a clear game plan. And the players have something clear to play for. Like they've got the goal of safety to play for. And that means that when they come to a team like us who are sort of just floating around with no sort of clear idea, no identity, no real goal now, because it is looking very unlikely we can push up the table to any great means. It's kind of like we're the ideal type of team for teams who are fighting relegation to one of them. Like back in the day when we were in the Prem around the relegation zone, you wanted games against mid-table teams who are probably in a false position in terms of their form and they kind of have nothing really left to play for. I know obviously we're not mathematically safe ourselves, but I mean in terms of like where the table is. And I think like QPR will probably look forward to a game against us. And I think it's up to our side. I mean it's quite hard to see where it's going to come from, to be honest. But at the same time, again, it is a big game because QPR obviously are below us, and if they were to win, it would be a massive boost for them, and it would sort of pull us further into an area of the table we really don't want to be in. On the flip side, if we were to beat them, we'd probably move up at least two places ourselves, given that the form of some of the teams around us is not quite as bad as ours, but is certainly sort of as inconsistent as ours has been up until the consistent losses that we've had recently. So I think it is, to all intents and purposes, a big game, a biggest game we've had for a while, and it's not the type of big game that you want, certainly not the type of big game that we've had in recent seasons, because we've been looking upwards in seasons recently, and even earlier on this season, we were thinking that the games against the teams above us, you know, challenging for promotion and playoffs were the big games. But right now, unfortunately, the big game is against the team below us, and it just is another example of kind of how expectations have had to change due to no fault of us as supporters, our own, and it's kind of the club's entirely self-inflicted kind of, I guess, dismantling of what had the hallmarks of maybe being another positive season. And we're now in March thinking a game against QPR is a big game just to kind of stay in mid-table, which is pretty damning in itself for me.
Feels like the first time in a long time we had nothing to play for at all, whether it be at either end of the table, doesn't it?
Well, we have got something to play for.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not mathematically safe, but yeah. What I mean is, like,
What do we need to stay up? I was reading somewhere.
Maybe 5-6 points, probably.
Yeah. I can't see us.
I think we will get that, those points, that, yeah. but it's not a nice place to be in thinking that we haven't. Right, like, even that we have to have that thought is indicative itself of where we shouldn't be, to be honest.
Well, if you look at it, say there's some of the results, say we lose on Saturday and some other results go against us, we'll be going to an international break, probably about 6 points off the relegation zone, having lost seven consecutive games. Now, I'd say we've probably got enough points on the board to eke our way out of it, but it's, you know, we shouldn't be taking these situations for granted, because it took us 4 years to get out of League One. You know, if the season was five games, there was five more games in the season now. Do you know what I mean? You probably would be thinking, we're in free fall. We're sleepwalking.
Yeah. And it gets back to what I was saying, that we're an ideal opponent for a team like QPR who are looking to move up the table. We're the type of team that they're going to want to play at the minute, because we're on an awful run of form. Seems to be only turning downwards, and they're not. If they were to beat us, they're not actually that far away from us, really, because they'd move on to 42. We're on 47, so they themselves get to within 5 points of where we are. So
we're very easy to play against at the moment.
Yeah,
very easy to play against. And it's all say this. You know, at the beginning of the season, I predicted we'd finish 13th, and that was on the basis that there's absolutely nothing after. Our sort of after 12, 13, 14 players that are pushing that squad, there's absolutely nothing there. The players were brought in January. I'm just going to be honest, I think Mundell's looks awful personally. Well,
Helder's had the goals with Jinx, that's what happened there.
Helder's been poor. You know, didn't Peter Michael, you're being harsh on like Mundell or whatever. I don't really care. It's like
he's not an instant impact, as he may get.
I don't really care. Well, he might
place.
Get, but I don't like. We keep on buying these
right
players.
Now.
We might be good in 3 years' time.
Yeah, exactly.
Great then, fantastic.
We wanted someone with an instant impact, really, didn't we?
If you buy lots of players who might be good in 3 years' time, but crap now, you'll be in the division below because you're going to lose all your games because they're not good enough now. So
well, yeah, it's hard to disagree with them.
Or you balance it out. But I'm not saying anything new. I'm not saying anything new.
We know what we need to do. Anyone?
Like, honestly,
anyone.
I was making like notes before this, and I thought I can't. It's pointless me saying any of this stuff because we've been saying it since last January, or since the summer transfer window closed last year, and they didn't go and buy another striker. Then, I mean, God, I'd give anything to have Stuart and Sims now when we were mourning then. Saying like there was no
I'd have Gellert now, like, to be fair.
Well,
he got a few towards the end, but yeah, no, Gareth, I agree with you. I think we just looked at
the average, joking about the average age, yeah, and it's not funny, it's ludicrous. You can't expect, and I know there's, you know, you could say it's an anomaly how good Chris Rigg is at his age, and he is young, and players like and Job as well, just gone 18, so they do bring it down. I get that, but all the more reason just to flesh that out, yeah. If you just list the players, man, that's left in the championship,
and it just so happens as well that
like
the Barn injuries,
and Gooch and Pritchard and Stu, and you just list them all,
and then the
like...
injuries that we've had happen to have been injuries/suspensions to the older players who we do still have, like Roberts. I know that Roberts and Clark aren't like old, but in terms of our squad, they are, and obviously 09 suspended. And Evans
it's
and
having
stuff.
These guys
it's
around
like,
the squad as well. It's not even just like. It's quite easy now to say, all right, Danny Bart's not getting a game for Norwich, but actually, there's two pretty accomplished championship defenders ahead of him at Norwich for a start, and he's the cover there. Like, any of those other two defenders would walk into our team.
Yeah.
But it's not just on the pitch, just being around them.
The
go to work,
isn't it?
They go to work every
yeah.
day. It's not just a Saturday job. That's not part of
I
our
people,
job. They go in work every day
that,
and they're
it's
around
like,
these players all day in training. They're playing with them every day. They're being around them in the dressing room. It makes a difference. It's obvious.
Yeah. I think people forget that, don't they? When it comes to looking at appearances. And it can work both ways, because sometimes there'll be players who don't play a lot and don't have any impact either. But I think for certainly Gooch and Barton and people like that, the impact that they would have on a squad like ours would be massive. And Pritchard's another one, obviously, as well. People say, oh, he's injured again. But even when players are injured, they're still in and around the squad for a lot of the time, aren't they, on the pitch, on the training
ground?
I don't think, so
people say this about the Stewart side, already end up being injured, so it was a good... You can't compensate for that. That's not... Yeah. It's not good decision-making because somebody then gets injured. Like, I'm sorry, if we're going to give like the recruitment team the benefit of the doubt that like people like Dennis Sergin and Elise are good players and you can't forecast that they're going to be injured all the time, then that works both ways. They don't get any credit either for certain players who are then going to get injured. So that's just a fact. That's just a fact that's the injury thing.
It's basically the worst possible scenario in terms of the squad and what's left. That could have happened, like with inter. I know it's self-inflicted, sort of 80%, 90% self-inflicted with getting rid of players like Bart Gooch, whatever. And then, like I said, the players who we do still have, who are sort of experienced and the better players as well, like Bar, Roberts, Clark, O'Nien, Evans, I know Evans is more long term, Sirkin, Elise, all them all being injured at the same time. And this is not an excuse, because obviously you need to have squad depth, and this is showing that we don't have the depth required, but it is certainly, they gambled with the young squad, and this is basically the chickens coming home to roost as to why that was such a big gamble to take with the transfer windows they did, because this is like, for the recruitment team, pretty much the nightmare scenario here, because it's basically exposing all the flaws in the squad that were basically self-inflicted, because we didn't need to get rid of Bart and Gooch. It's not like we got a lot of money for them, and we've not replaced them, so they could have still been here quite easily. Same with Pritchard. And the issues that we've brought on ourselves because of the injuries that have subsequently happened to Clark and whatever. It's a bit like last year when we didn't sign a striker, then Stewart gets injured, and it exposed that, you know, one or two injuries can expose how threadbare the actual high level of the squad is. And it's just such a shame, again, to have to go on about this, but it's there's no getting away from it, is that the recruitment just has not been at the level we've needed to sustain what we think, what we were told was the goal. I mean, quite, you know, I know it's all been gone over about what they've said versus what they've done. It's you know, I'm going to go over all now, but it's just, this is the stark reality of where we are. And it's, hopefully it's a shock to them as well, which might bring about a bit of a change in strategy. But I mean, I don't know how likely that is to happen.
Any positives from the weekend, Gareth? Performance-wise?
I mean, Rick did all right.
Good goal by Job.
Great goal. Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, Job's been Callum Doyle, hasn't he? Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Like, he's a player. There's a player there, and now it's like he's getting stick, but he's got a lot of quality and ability. He's just been overplayed. He hasn't had and that's all that's happened. And you know, I would say that. Yeah, we scored a couple of goals. We haven't scored many recently. You know,
and it's good. And it's good for Mundell. It's good from the.
Yeah, it's
We need something. We need something to spark one of these players in life. So hopefully that could be it.
Well, yeah, I mean,
another thing I'd say as well is I thought the subs when Aushish and Rusin came on. I thought again, although neither of them scored, I thought they both had a good impact versus. Quite why they didn't start, given that they did the exact same thing against Leicester midweek. I would have started at least one, if not both of them. But I thought they both changed the game for the better when they came on. Certainly versus the players that they replaced, I think.
But why has Ashish gone off the radar so much? Because he's always looked, yeah. out of all the young players they've signed recently, he's always been the one who's looked like there's very raw, there. But there's something there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Yeah.
And he looks ready to play.
Yeah, I mean, I would have started him, especially given how well he did against Leicester when he came on. I don't quite know why he didn't then start the game, because I think that was quite an obvious thing to do, given that he plays kind of similar to the way Pritchard does. And remember, we'd often say Pritchard sometimes looks better coming off the bench, but then often when he did start, he'd also be good then as well. I think Oshie sort of plays the game in a similar way, not necessarily as good, but a similar type player where, you know, he tries to speed up the play, a lot of one-touch passes. He's always moving. He's quick. If the ball goes out, he's quick to get it and keep the play moving. And I think we needed that massively against Leicester, and then we needed it again on Saturday. And I think he provided that both times. And I think with Rusin, I think his movement, again, I know he was a bit more out wide, wasn't he, for quite a bit of the time. But I think in general, I think, although he's not necessarily an out-and-out striker, I think he should be the one starting up front, not Burstow or Hemier. And I think Aushi should certainly be starting as well on Saturday. I know obviously it'll be a preview pod, but I just wanted to mention two for the impact they had was decent. I wouldn't say it was great, but it was certainly better than what we'd had before they came on.
I don't know at what point. What is the point in playing Burstow at all? He's not our player. He's been incredibly poor, really, over the course of the season. Whether he's a young player or not, it's irrelevant to me. He's not our player. We're not getting anything out of him, so there's no point playing him. You might as well play your players. You know, Rusin has been. He started brighter, but I think again, it's like He's got himself a couple of goals, which is good, but feels like his confidence is probably
ebbed away. Yeah, because he's getting goals and then he's not getting started. And it's like he must be thinking, what more do I have to do to get a, you know.
But
he's just rotating the strikers, hoping something's going to, like, it just seems like they're just hoping one of them is miraculously going to turn it in a centre forward that we've been missing. It's like,
if you're going to pick one game,
you don't score, you're out. One game, you don't score, you're out.
If you're going to rotate
them round like a conveyor belt.
If you're going to persist with one, it would be Roussin, because he's the one who's got more goals than any of the others has, and he's the one who looks far more on the same wavelength as the other better players in the squad do as well. So quite why Burstow's starting over Roussin, I don't get it, because he's just nowhere near Burstow, is he? I mean, one-on-one he had in the first half where he basically just passed it like so far wide of the goal when he had...
Instead of squaring it, yeah.
Yeah, it was just like...
Gareth's made the basic point where the debate ends. He's not able to play it. Like, you don't mind if it's Ahmad and he's like best player in the league. Then you kind of accept that you've got to use the loan system, don't you? Where you know where you place the hierarchy on the food chain. You know you've got to utilize the loan market as well as you can. But if they're not adding anything at all, then it's somebody else's player. So you're not getting anything.
I mean, you look at the loan market. Some of the other, you know, teams who are around the top six, you know, Hull, you know, got Carvalho from Liverpool, and then you've got David Brooks coming to Southampton. I know that's convenient because of the location, but he's a really good player. You know, obviously Kiefer Moore.
Yeah, scored again, didn't he?
Yeah, well, I mean, just some of the mental gymnastics. Some people will be like, oh, well, he wouldn't score goals on our team anyway. It's like, that's not how football works, mate. Like, you become a better team by adding better players to your team. That's literally how it works. You know, he's the type
of striker we're crying out for.
Yeah, but everyone knew this. But like, still people find a way to decide it's a bad idea because, well, he wants X amount a week. Well, how much have we spent on the players we brought in and the length of contracts that we brought them in on, who are probably not going to be good enough at any point to get us to where we need to be? What's, you know, you offset the value to the team in terms of what the impact of that person, that player could have had in that shorter period of time. You know, I just think that the approach that they've got is very much a sort of, we know better.
That's it. It's almost like they want to prove that they don't need to sign players like Mo.
We are really clever. We know we're going to do this because we've stolen the march on all like on everyone. It's like we're reinventing the wheel. We're not. We're just signing average footballers at the moment who might become good. I mean,
it's not like a new thing, is it?
No, they've backed themselves up
that much as well. They've pat themselves on the back that much about it. That's a thing, and given this unshakable belief that last season's success was down to that and down to them. Yeah. And
Triantis has been in the midfield
because you could always see.
He was actually all right. I caught a fair bit of that game yesterday. He was actually all right.
Is that the unique opportunity he gets to go playing out of position for him?
I mean, I know it's not a comfortable level or whatever.
I guess you could say it's
positive that he looked decent again. I mean, Rangers obviously are quite a good team in Scotland. Scotland go, aren't they? So it's quite good.
If he starts tearing up there midfield and starts playing really well, you just know that we're going to hear that was part of the plan and they knew that was going to happen. There's a little bit of that, don't they?
The 4D chess, we're eight moves ahead. We actually knew that Triantis would randomly play in midfield in a cup game in March.
They will come out and they will say, we always knew him in midfield was a possibility. I'm telling you. Anyway, right, I guess we've got to ask about the manager situation here. Gareth, come to you first. Is there a decision to be made now?
I would say so. I think there's lots of parts of this, isn't there? In that they probably were hoping, they probably didn't expect it to go as badly as this. But in the words of, you know, we'll plod on till the end of the season. that's the mentality of the person apparently who's driving this high performance culture. So that would say the messaging from the top is basically we've written this off on the 1st of February as a bad job, and we'll have another pop next season. So I would say, I think the instigating factor for Kirill Louis-Dreyfus will be, we've seen before where he's made decisions in not panic, but he's kind of gone, oh, this isn't going as expected. I better do it now rather than later. And he did that with Lee Johnson. He did it with Tony Mowbray to a point. He did it with Michael Beale. So I don't think it's infeasible that he'll take an action. If we do take an action, I think we'll probably see another interim appointment at the end of the season, somebody of an experienced nature who's out of work currently, who maybe can come
in. What's that going to do to Dodds' confidence? Well, you know, even being replaced by a permanent manager, there's a bigger picture, unfortunately, than that. But, like, that's some... Because everything was going so well, wasn't it? Well, you know what I mean? Like... highly regarded as a coach. We said before when Mowbray was here, Mowbray, we know his teams like to play attacking football, but he wasn't a training ground coach, really. He was just a figurehead of it all, and all the credit seemed to be going to Dodds and Proctor about the attacking front foot football. And it's just now he doesn't have the experience to be that figurehead, clearly.
With Dodds,
it's not always about like being a really good coach, is it? As we saw with Michael Beale.
Well, I was going to say, because he's inherited the mess that Beale left, essentially. Part of which was Beale's fault, part of which was the recruitment base and which players are available. And he's not had the experience to be able to turn around, I guess, the confidence in the squad, the mentality, plus also working with, you know, Clark. There's no Clark, there's no Roberts, there's various other suspensions and injuries, plus obviously there's the general level of inexperience and his inexperience. And I'd say it's a lot harder now for him than it was when he had the Leeds, West Brom and Bristol City games earlier in the season, because he was inheriting a team that were playing better and we were higher up the table and had more of the players available, and obviously the players were higher in confidence. Whereas this time around, this is where you'd probably need more experience from a manager who's been in situations like this before, where the team are low on confidence and needs to turn around quickly. It's less probably about the coaching right now than it is about the man management and about the experience of what to say, which teams to play, formations, not so much tactically, but maybe like trying to get the most out of the players in terms of getting a mentality there and getting some confidence back into them. And that's probably something that managers learn mainly through experience rather than, obviously, what Dodds is good at, which is the sort of tactical side of it. So maybe an experienced appointment would be welcome with Dodds still to do more of the training ground stuff. Because if you know what we wouldn't necessarily, what I don't think would work is, say, for example, just for argument's sake, Warnock, who's an out of work experienced manager, to him to come in, I'm not so sure this would be the type of squad he'd be used to working with, and obviously he wouldn't have a window to sign anyone. But as a motivator and as an experienced sort of manager to turn around a mentality within the squad, that would be good. But he'd probably need some help in terms of working with the players tactically, because he won't know much of anything about any of them. But it could work, definitely. I'm not sure, though. Not Warnock specifically, just someone experienced coming in.
Well, he's come, you know, the situation, the most success we've had has been when we've had an older head working alongside the group that the coaches that we've got. Where things have fallen down a bit is when we've deviated from that. I just think if we lose on Saturday, with the international break coming up, I think there'll be a level of temptation there to make a change.
Yeah.
You're on mute, Stephen. I don't know if you meant to be talking there, but you're on mute.
I was talking to my 4-year-old, yeah, carry on.
Oh, all right, okay, it's fine. Just checking in case you'd forgot to take yourself off. Yeah, I just think that Again, it's really interesting 6 months, and I think we kind of start talking about it the other week. You know, we're going to sell Jack Clark in the summer for a sizable fee. Will we sell anybody else? I don't know. And then this will be the first reinvestment opportunity, that self-generated reinvestment opportunity that we'll have created for ourselves in order to see if it really is the case of, well, we kick on once we make the sale of that player who's got a price tag. So, but which means that we will be persistent, I imagine, with the setup that we've got in terms of Speakman being the figurehead of that setup. But really, he's a very, very lucky man, in my opinion, to still get that opportunity, because in my opinion, the bad outweighs the good, and it gets worse every window. The glaring problems that are visible to everybody are either ignored or not part of the plan to resolve. It's like, we'll just push on and do this instead. Mm-hmm. And I would say that, you know, at the moment, the only thing he's kind of gotten is knowing the Bellingham seems to be the main point on his CV. And that's all, in my opinion, that's, you know, there'll be some people probably out there going, oh, you're talking a load of rubbish. Fine. If you enjoy, if you think what we've done under his stewardship in terms of the sort of identifying players, you know, Triantis is playing in midfield and on the bench, playing for Hibs development squad alongside Meander. Bennett can't get into the team that he's gone on loan to, where he went to go and get game time. You know, there's just three off the top of my head. You know, Hamia hasn't had an impact. I think you could probably go through every sign we've made and kind of go, there's probably more duds at this stage than positives.
There's certainly more duds or unknowns than instant impact, definite improvements. Yeah, absolutely.
Which can happen when you sign young players. Well, that's what we keep saying. You need to counterbalance it by bringing in those other players who are ready to go. That's the only way they're going to come on. You're not going to make money on them if they're not playing, and if they're playing a team that loses 7 games in a row in the championship.
Yeah, what I was going to say is that I think, like, I don't want to go. I wouldn't say we should go back to like an old fashioned thing where the manager has ultimate, because that's not how teams work. But I think what we need to have is a more flexible approach to because the director of football, whatever Speakman's title is, model, I think is what is going to happen with clubs now. That's the way it is. I don't think managers should have ultimate control, but the particular way that Speakman and the rest of his team seem to do it is very, very dogmatic. Too dogmatic, really, in terms of what they're trying to achieve versus and how they think it should be done, and there won't be any deviation from it. Plus, obviously, the communication style, the sort of hindsight, never admitting when they're wrong, et cetera, type thing. So I wouldn't advocate sticking with that, but I think they need to either change the way they approach it, or there needs to be a change of who does the role. But I certainly think there should still be in place a system whereby there is somebody above the manager and coaches who does the non-training ground type of thing, because that's pretty standard now. I mean, from what I can think, there's only one club in the Prem who doesn't have that. That's Sheffield United. I think most of the clubs in the Championship have it as well, and below. But like Gareth said, I think the issue is with the way that it's done by the current people who do it in terms of Speakman and his team. And I think that is probably a bigger issue than the manager. Obviously, like we've said, what happens with the sale of Clark, if and when that happens, and where that money, how that money is invested, that would also probably be what may be part of what would attract a manager to come in the summer, would be the prospect of there being money to spend. Not necessarily that they be the one to spend it themselves, but I don't think a lot of managers expect to do that now. I think it's pretty accepted by most managers that they'll have an input, but it's not just them buying players. The worry would be, obviously, if the money wasn't actually allocated to signings, if it was sort of brushed off as, oh, well, we've used some to do this to the training ground, some to do this to the stadium, some to pay up, you know, to pay wages and all that. That would be what would stick in the gut for a lot of people, obviously. What really will need to happen with sales of the level of Clark and or others will be like serious investment in the playing squad in terms of ready-to-go replacements.
Those questions are around the corner because it could be that Speakman's hands are entirely tied, like you say. But, you know, and maybe he masks that because of, like you've just said, how dogmatic it can be in terms of, like, what we're doing is undeniably true. And you know, it was always going to come back to this. I remember Phil Smith did an article, one match we won this season. He was like, there wasn't even really a... didn't even seem to be a plan. It was just vibes and it was brilliant. And that's right when it clicks, these young players on the front foot. But when, like I've said, rudderless earlier, and that, but that is what happens. It can be exciting, but it can also go the way it's gone now. And I think that question for the man at the top's got to be. It's got to be. People must be starting to ask these questions soon. 100%. Why are you here? Why? What? Are you? If you're not going to invest, why are you here? Let's see. I think at the end of the season...
Because it's one thing to say sustainability, and because I know Gareth put this really well before about the sustainability thing. It's like, that's fine, but at the minute, like, what? Like, we need some investment to be able to make a sustainable good level.
You can't not invest in a football club. Yeah, no. It's not possible.
Teams who hang around in the Championship are never sustainable because it just doesn't work. Like, at this level, like, we wouldn't ever be able to challenge or anything like for promotion by being sustainable. At this point, we need investment first. Of course, the other thing would be to sell assets. But the problem is, if we sell Clark and then we don't allocate that money right, and then we still nowhere, what happens then? Do we have to sell somebody else, or does money get put in that? So, like you say, both of you, I think it's the question is going to be. Well, people are already asking, but why are they here? Because if he's not. What is the point of him owning the club in the Championship? I don't get what he's getting out of that at all.
I'm telling you now, if the replacement the replacement for Jack Clark's already in the door, we will get relegated next season.
Right, yeah.
People can say I'm being sensationalist or whatever. We have lost the third highest amount of games in the league this season, pretty much. Like, we were challenging for the playoffs, but the sheer volume of games that we've lost is... it's a lot of games to lose.
And we're losing in the same way as well.
Said this before with the, you know, I haven't got a problem with the bringing younger players in, things like that, but we are not creating the best opportunity for them to perform.
Exactly.
So that we're not protecting them. We're just throwing them in there and it's like, off you go. You know, they're being tasked for winning. You know, people, you know, oh, well, Danny Barwell and Norwich has not even played. But then when we sign a player who has not played ever, it's always, well, what an amazing, like, what an amazing signing that is. Well, he's never played a game. He's never even kicked a ball at a professional level in like, cases some of the players have brought in.
It's about the balance in it, really. And the balance is just totally off.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, we are repeating ourselves, and that said this before. I haven't got a problem with identifying talented young footballers, bringing them in and developing them and hoping that they become something. We're not giving them that. I've said it before, it's negligence.
Yeah, it is.
We're not looking after these. We're not looking after them. They're being thrown under the bus.
What's the point in buying them if you're not going to give them the best possible conditions to perform? That's... unless you're trying to do everything on the cheap, obviously, and is the other side of
it. And it sounds harsh, but, you know, as fans, why should we accept that, really? I mean...
but we shouldn't.
It's not fair to expect supporters to, you know, pay the money. You know, you got thousands of people travelling the country every week to watch Sunderland. Not me, by the way. You know, I go to the home games, but you got people, you know, traveling the country.
Investing in it financially and emotionally.
Yeah, and you're talking about a situation where they're essentially watching an experiment, somebody else's experiment, and then you're, you know, and yeah, there's an argument to say, well, you don't have to go. It's like, you know, but we all know that's not how football works. You know, football supporters are like the worst Trek customer in like any, in anything. It's like we're completely taken for granted generally.
And that goes for every set of fans. Yeah,
it does.
Much.
It does. Yeah. You know, we're taken for granted. It's like you just expect it to be there, and if you don't go, then you're the. So bad
I think
guy.
somebody else will go instead if they don't go. Yeah,
they might at some clubs, but you know.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like with our away following, like the club know that. Oh, we. I mean, I would never say it's a bad thing we sell out every away game, but they know that that'll continue to happen.
The support, no matter what. The support for the team is always unconditional.
Yeah,
And that's why football clubs get away with it, and it's very frustrating to see. You know, we had a great opportunity last year, which we turned down, in my opinion. I don't mean turned down like, well, we could have got promoted and we chose not to. We didn't take the actions we needed to.
Yeah.
In the
key
moments.
Didn't give ourselves the best chance of doing it, did we?
And it wouldn't have taken much, and this is the frustrating thing now we're here.
Well, the fact we nearly did it with that by the end, by that Luton second leg play of how makeshift that side was that we were fielding,
it was within touching distance, and this is what we say. You need to be, it's all well and good to have a long-term plan. You also need to identify opportunity. That's what management and leadership is. It's not just, yes, you have a template and that's always the main thing, but
it's about being flexible.
Yeah, but and the fact they just ignored, the fact that Mowbray and Bale have been so vocal about what they need, like it's just the fact they just ignored the manager who constantly said, we're going to need to replace Corey Evans in midfield. We're going to need a striker. He couldn't have said it more. He told us all in a talk and we had in the summer that Emiya wasn't good enough. He was indirect with it, and he was careful the way he said it. But looking back now, he was telling us. He was telling us then.
Well, that's the thing.
He was saying then, this. I'm sorry, this kid. We'll try and work with him. He's not good enough. He told us this.
I think it was Matt and Rick on their pod on Thursday mentioned like how much saw some. Rick said how much data he saw some data on how much more work Hemi is having to do for us than what he was doing at Benfica, and how big the difference is and all that. And it's like, why sign players where they're going to have to improve so much just to get to a level where they'll be basically competent? It's such a huge risk. And yes, some players will be able to come from nowhere and immediately have an impact, or have an impact fairly quickly. But it seems that all we're doing is signing these players at the minute. And like you say, Stephen, with Hemi, the managers know it straight away. The coaches will know it. And even some of the other players will know it as well, to be honest. But it must be draining for them to have to go out and play in spite of... It's almost like we're having to do things in spite of the direction we're going, rather than as a benefit of it. The conditions haven't been created to make us make the best of more than the sum of our parts. It's like we're fighting against the constant self-inflicted problems, and it's just tiring, man, because there's so much good has happened in a short space of time, but it just gets overshadowed constantly by the negatives, and it's just so frustrating.
I think...
Because everyone can see it. Like, you know, everyone can see what the problem is. And some people might not admit it to themselves, but it's obvious.
I don't know. I don't think there's many of those left now. Even you know, the people who've done it on social media and defended them just blindly at times, even starting to, like, see it for what it is now, and it's.
But I'm still reading people saying, actually, you know, well, it's our second season in the Championship, and like we're going to finish the table, and
the longest I've ever been out of the Premier League.
Like, what did you like? It's like kind of like, oh well, you know, it hasn't been like that bad because we're in League One 2 years ago. Stop using League
I'm
One.
Sick of hearing it. I'm sick of
Stop
hearing
using
it.
League One.
You can't be used as an excuse. Not... Like, we're supposed to be progressing.
It's the longest we've ever been out of the Premier League, man. Out of the top division.
Yeah.
Ever.
Being in League One was an embarrassment and should never
it was
have
an
happened.
Aberration, wasn't it? Yeah.
And you know, that to be used as the as a point of reference, it should just be ignored. It should be referred to as. It shouldn't exist as a point of reference. It was something that happened and should never have happened, And it should have been a lesson. And at the moment, it feels a little bit like we haven't. We're taking where we are at the moment for granted. It's like we've been relegated before to that division, and it can happen again. Yeah. I've said this before, you know, about like, you know, see what happened with Barnsley, and they got the playoffs and then got relegated the following season. Again, because, you know, it's an overthought approach to recruitment, which, when it doesn't work, leaves you phenomenally exposed. And we are exposed top to bottom at the moment. I'm sure, like, Mike Dodds is a really good coach. I think what we've seen from the players, when we've had the right setup and the players available, I think we've seen how good the coaching of those younger players has been. And I just think that's the most jarring thing, is we've gone from a really exciting, attacking, young team, so vibrant, and, you know, say, playing like kids in the playground, to this, which is, you know, as bad as the relegation season under Chris Coleman in terms of the football and the results. It really is. It's like everything's, all the positivity, all the good stuff's just been sucked out of the team.
Yeah.
And there can be external factors in that, yeah, like injuries and things like that. But you are allowed to create scenarios in which you protect yourself.
Yeah.
And that means not leaving yourself exposed in these scenarios. And people are like, oh, well, we've lost our best players and stuff. It's fine, but you're allowed to have more than two good players or three good players.
Well, that's it. I mean, every side in the division has injuries. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not about just comparing ourselves to the parachute payment teams either. Like, there's teams above us now who have been in this division way longer than we have, and have got no parachute payments and no money or nothing. And it's not about competing with the top teams anymore. It's about us just having a basic level of competence in the division. And we're struggling. I mean, I honestly don't think we will go down. I think things will turn probably sooner rather than later to a point whereby we'll finish the season mid-table. But it just puts so much pressure on the summer in terms of manager recruitment, player recruitment, and everything else.
But it can't just fizzle out. They're going to have some sort of sign of recovery at the end of the season as well, where we finish on a little bit of a run if we want to sell tickets next year. That's a fact. I do think, like Gareth alluded to there, that I think Christian Speakman isn't daft and he knows this, and I think he will be seriously considering a change in the head coach position now, because if the fans aren't going to turn on Dodds, because everybody knows the situation and know that he's not an option as a full-time head coach. So where are the eyes going to go? Where's the criticism going to go? And it's going to go to him, and he knows it. So that's why I don't think Dodd, unless we suddenly now pull a string of results together. I personally think if we don't win on Saturday, he'll make a change.
I mean, if they've got a manager in mind for the summer, if they've got an option, if they're in work, this is the moment to go. Now we do it now, and we pay whatever we need. We pay the compensation, because this is the person we want to take the club forward after the summer. But bringing them in now gives the season some purpose, because they're saying the person coming in's got 8-9 games to get to know the group, get understand what the requirement is from that team, and what needs to. You know, what needs to be added to it in the summer. You know, I'm not saying it's the same, but obviously you remember, you know, the whole Terry Butcher situations, the Notts County game, staying up the last day of the season. I'm not saying we're quite in that territory, but, you know, with three or four games to go, if we're not safe, I think people will be like, we've gone from a point off the playoffs when we sacked Tony Mowbray to, or whatever it was, to relegation battle.
Mental.
It's not acceptable. And, you know, my personal view is, said it on social media over the weekend. He must, you know, being the director.
Is he gone? Is this
I think,
me?
I think he's gone. I don't, no, I think it's Gareth. I'm still
okay,
here.
Right. Okay, right. Well, I mean, we were gonna probably wrap things up there. Oh, you're back with us, Gareth. We lost you there.
I did, probably for the best, really.
Just when you're on your, just when you were having your.
No, so I was basically well. just my view is that that person is on a very is in a very very fortunate position, and I would say that he's going to get away with he's going to, you know, get away with it, because we couldn't possibly make that change in the summer, because if we're at this apex in the plan, in the model,
there's enough to do without changing that as well.
Yeah, they're not going to get rid of the person who's supposed to be orchestrating the reinvestment of that money. So he's going to get like a bash at it by proxy. But I just think he's a very, very lucky guy, very, very lucky guy, because it's not been good enough. If you can look at that squad, that squad that has been assembled is not good enough.
Something. Just to, like I say, going over all ground again. Like the failure to capitalise last season, and then the self harm in getting.
Yeah, it's the fact how much of it's been self inflicted with managers and players. It's crazy. Yeah.
And just the whole Black Cat Spa thing as well. Not to go on a massive tangent about that again, because again that's all ground.
Yeah, let's not start.
But it is linked. It's all connected, because in my opinion, it's born out of sheer arrogance that they are thinking that every single decision they make is the right one, and they just took our input into any of this for granted. In my opinion, right? Well, we've got on there. Matt will be back late in the week to look ahead to that game against QPR, which ridiculous that this seems massive.
Well, but it is, Stephen. It was.
I'm glad I'm not going away. You know, it's weirdly.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm not coming up for that either.
It was 11 years ago last week when we did the first Wise Men Say podcast, 7th of March 2013, and we previewed QPR.
Who were bottom of the league,
and we lost 3-1.
We did, and we're absolutely rotten, weren't we?
Yeah.
That
was the beginning of the end for
Martin O'Neill.
It was. It's funny, isn't it? Because the standard then was like, this is unacceptable, and now it's like we're talking about
next level down,
stodging about in the championship being okay in some respects. It's just funny, isn't it? How things change.
Football, change all funny old game.
Oh well, quite therapeutic in a way, as these things often can be. Enjoyed so that. Might be back later in the week. And if you don't want to go to the match on Saturday, we've got an open day if you want to do the grey, come along with that. Right, okay. As always, Karen's shaking his head. Free advertising, isn't it? I should have done. Right, okay. As always, thanks for listening.
's from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.